You're listening to the Elevate Podcast, and I'm your host, Robert Glazer. Join me as I talk to world-class performers about how they build their capacity and reach greater heights in leadership, business, and life, and how you can do the same. Welcome to the Elevate Podcast and another edition of Weekend Conversations. Each week, we'll take a deeper dive into an article or interview shared during the week, often a Friday forward. And joining me to do this is Mick, the co-producer of the Elevate Podcast. How are you, Mick?
Hey, Bob. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Coming off a family vacation week, so getting back to a lot of my unanswered emails. But that's how it should be.
Fair enough. Yeah, so basically, we're going to be talking about the latest Friday Forward called Signaling Virtue. And this post focuses on the story of Alexei Navalny, who died in prison last week in Russia under mysterious circumstances. Navalny was internationally recognized for being a strident critic of Vladimir Putin and his allies, and many reputable people have expressed suspicion that the Kremlin was potentially involved in his death. What prompted you to focus this on Navalny's story?
Yeah, Navalny was sort of a prompt for this. We were talking about this before the episode, but often there's kind of a subject that I've been hearing about or different things, and then there's a current event that maybe either supports that or kind of shows the opposite of that to bring out that story. And I think that was the case this week. And that's sort of contrasting, you know, his situation, which is pretty fascinating and amazing, particularly his decision to go back to Russia, knowing kind of what his fate would be, with the sort of common practice of virtue signaling. And I just thought it was an interesting contradiction to sort of look at the two and how they differ.
Yeah, and so I think it's a really important detail to emphasize. Obviously, Navalny's political activism was a huge part of why he was imprisoned. And, you know, he was, by his own accounting and insistence, kind of wrongfully imprisoned for political reasons by Putin's government. I think that what sort of might be the missing piece of the public's understanding of Navalny's story that really strikes the contrast with what you're talking about in the post, the virtue signaling, is Navalny actually was targeted by an assassination attempt in August of 2020. And he actually escaped Russia and got treatment in Germany and recovered. But then shortly after he completed his recovery, he made the decision to go back to Russia with the knowledge that he was certainly giving up his freedom in doing so. And indeed, he was arrested as soon as he arrived in Moscow. But also, he may have literally been laying down his life for it. And that seems like a very important detail, that he knew that massive risk, and he still went back to Russia to continue his fight and his activism.
Yeah, we talk a lot about values and core values. And I think, you know, if you really believe in something deeply, as he believed in sort of the fighting the corruption in Russia and the institution, then it's got to cost you something. And you got to be consistent, you know, with that. And you could assume that, you know, there are so many other people easier. He could have changed his story and say, I was wrong and a whole bunch of things and probably been totally free. But he just wasn't willing to do that. And he actually was, you know, sometimes it sounds extreme, say in history, people would lay their, you know, life on the line for values. And we don't really see that anymore. In fact, we see people shape-shifting their values often because, you know, they don't want to get in trouble with their own team or their own sort of side of the coin. But this just seemed a little bit of a throwback in terms of, again, he believed in this and not that he made the ultimate sacrifice for it. I look, he was a young guy. I don't even think he was 50. He was healthy. He was transferred to a kind of remote penal colony in the middle of nowhere, treated horribly, and then mysteriously dies and his family can't find the body. So I'm generally not a conspiracy theorist, but I think, you know, all evidence points to one outcome here.
Yeah. And so the decision that, or the framing of the post, is to sort of juxtapose this example of Navalny willingly making this ultimate sacrifice and very deliberately choosing to lay everything on the line for his cause versus this concept of virtue signaling, and particularly online virtue signaling. So can you talk about how you think of and define the latter, that type of virtue signaling?
Yeah. So I think virtual signaling, when someone tries to express opinion or a sentiment publicly, where the purpose is actually to demonstrate their that they're good or their character or their moral convictions around a particular issue, the reason why they do it is often to gain social approval or standing rather than to express genuine conviction in an idea. Like, look, a lot of things, and we've had a bunch in the last year, you know, strong positions are pretty controversial. Virtue signaling is often like, it's hard to find a fault with it, right? It's something that is benign enough to support something that, you know, it's not, it doesn't really have a cost. It doesn't have a fault. You can't argue against it. And so, and people, and it has a bandwagon element too, where people are kind of jumping on a popular trend and want to seem like they're on the right side of history, or at least that, you know, movement of the moment.
Yeah. And so I think that there's a lot of cases where people try to make their voice heard on something, a topic. You know, they might take a particular Facebook profile picture, for example, is a really common one where there's the sort of filtered ones that suit a particular social cause. And there tends to be a contagion effect where you see them just become extremely widespread. I think that there is often a distinction between two types of people who do that. I think that there are people who are genuinely opportunistic about this and don't care and just want to jump on the bandwagon and score some cheap social credibility. I also think there's a lot of people who do genuinely care to some extent, but aren't necessarily putting their time and their money towards something. They see posting about it or putting some sort of reposted message out as their way of showing support. Do you think that there is a meaningful difference between that, or do you think it's all kind of the same thing and it's not a whole lot of good if you're not willing to really come out and put something on the line for it?
I think there are degrees, right? I think if you had to make a general rule, I would say the folks that are early on something are taking some risk with it, and you know, there could be some blowback. But then once people see the bandwagon effects sort of kick in, then being the last person to pile on the bandwagon is sort of very low risk. You don't know really how much they care about it, but there's almost this fear of being left out or not. It's almost like a cousin of a fear of missing out, a fear of not kind of jumping on the movement. Look, one of the ones I can think of was right after the George Floyd incident, you know, you had people posting black squares or sort of a blackout on social media. And there was a lot of social pressure to do that, despite not understanding how it might actually help in any way. And then it actually turns out it did more harm than good. What it did was just take over social media and sort of block out any voices or things that people were actually trying to talk about. It kind of overwhelmed social media with this basically large virtual signaling effort that actually did more harm than good, because it shut out people who were trying to make more specific and impassioned, you know, arguments. And so the evidence was pretty clear a week later that that was a very futile and not helpful effort. But again, in the moment, I think a lot of people thought, if I don't do this, everyone else is doing it.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? 2 years ago, I bought a dual suspension mountain bike for the first time, and it pushed me to ride trails that I had never been willing to try before. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has exceptional capability that will have you seeing the possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. The Lexus GX comes with available dynamic sky panorama glass roof, available front row massaging seats, best-in-class towing capacity, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, and available multi-terrain select. I've seen the new Lexus GX popping up all around my town, and not only does it have the capabilities to take you to new places on and off the road, but it's a great-looking car. The new Lexus GX is ready to raise the bar for you. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. It helps you identify and hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. Case in point, last year I asked the CEO of a major ski resort how he got his job, and he told me that he saw it on LinkedIn and decided to apply. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. The team at LinkedIn is also constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/practical. That's linkedin.com/practical to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I'm perfectly willing to just acknowledge I was one of the people who did it. And I, at the time, I did think, is this really the best I can do? And I wouldn't say that I felt great about it in the moment, not because I wasn't supportive, but because I really was wondering whether it was actually doing any good. It didn't occur to me in the moment that it could possibly even be counterproductive. Like you were saying, it kind of drowned out the conversation and it overshadowed some more effective activism and points about it. But I do suspect that that type of thing does happen in a lot of cases. And in a social media environment where it's harder than ever to separate signal from noise, adding to the noise is part of the problem, is making yourself part of the problem in a way.
Yeah, and you've probably felt some social pressure to do that, right? Like that, we all do. Like this is how psychology works, and it's all this stuff works. But yeah, I think social media makes this stuff pretty easy to change a logo or change a filter or do something or throw something out there. And you know, this gets to the second part of the conversation, and then if it gets a little, you know, choppy at all, make it go away, you know, quickly.
Yeah, and where I keep kind of turning around in my head, sort of the idea I'm thinking about is I think that it is difficult for people to acknowledge that sometimes that type of posting or reposting, even if it is well-meaning, even if it's not scoring points, even if it's by people who really truly are passionate and supportive of the cause that they're doing, I think that it is difficult to accept the fact that maybe it's not doing any good. Maybe it's actually doing more harm than good. And maybe it is all noise that is drowning out.
Or it's encouraging noise, right? Like you said, maybe those 10 or 20 people actually supported the cause and did some stuff and then complemented it with some sort of social media initiative, making it easy for everyone else to think that grabbing a filter and changing it fixes everything and makes it better, right? So sometimes it might be that they're actually just setting the stage for everyone else to virtue signal and think, oh, I'm such a good person, or, you know, and it's hard to tell the authenticity when everyone's doing something. Again, the difference between sort of a real value and conviction and virtue signaling is like real value and conviction is I need to say that. It's like truth serum. I need to say this and get it out there. And like, I'm dead set on this, irrespective of who agrees, disagrees, and the consequences. Virtue signaling is almost always safe. It doesn't cost you anything. And that's why, particularly, I think I've read a lot of conservative criticism on it, is again, it's, if there's no risk or it doesn't cost you anything, it's very likely that it's not doing any good.
And I think that there is a meaningful difference between if it's something, as you said, that's very easy to do, there's a difference between that and something that, say, if you write a very thoughtful article or post about something where you really dig into why you're passionate about it, what you think the actions that people can take are about it, you put that degree of time and effort and craft into really putting something unique and meaningful out about it. I think that there is a difference between even that and between just reposting something that takes 2 seconds.
Yeah. And look, people are afraid to have people disagree these days. I know that seems silly because it seems like we argue about everything. But someone told me once, particularly around my speaking, they said, look, if someone doesn't hate your speech, someone won't love your speech, right? You can give a speech that's very blah, like it doesn't offend anyone, but it doesn't excite anyone. To kind of get fives, you need to get ones and vice versa. You can write a 3 that's super neutral and doesn't mean anything to anyone. And that's what a lot of these things are. They're 3s, right? They're not horrible. They're not good. They don't do anything. You know, I've seen a lot of people, particularly in the last couple of months and with some of the stuff in the Middle East take some real risk. And they've acknowledged that there's consequences for that. Some of the people are shocked that there's consequences, which is a whole nother article. And some are like fully willing to take them because they're like, look, if this is a belief that you have, then I don't want anything to do with you or your organization or otherwise.
And if you're thinking about the sort of variations, the forms that the virtue signaling can often take,
yeah,
and trying to kind of make a distinction between the various types, is the primary issue that grates on you the lack of authenticity? Is it the lack of risk? Is it the lack of sacrifice? Or is it kind of everything rolled into one?
I think authenticity is the major and the other things are the minor, right? Because if you were authentic about it, then you'd understand it has some risks. It may have some consequence. It won't appeal to everyone. But also, again, are we solving anything? I tend to be very skeptical when everyone is jumping on some bandwagon of anything, because I think it, and particularly when it's easy, right? When it's super easy, can we just click the thing or give $5 or absolve ourselves of responsibility and say that we're a good person and make us think that we're a good person because we did that? When everything that's super easy has a cost, it's just a matter of understanding what that cost is. And so again, I think some people have taken some strong actions recently. And there's two camps. One, they understand the consequences and they're willing to live with them. But I've also seen some students pretty surprised that there are consequences for taking a stand or doing something. They want the glory of the risk without the consequences. I mean, I was listening to, I won't get into what actually happened, but I was listening to a young woman kind of sort of bemoan the things that led up to her losing her scholarship and otherwise her housing. And she was out there trying to turn herself into sort of a martyr. And in fact, it was a very logical consequence for what she did, but she just didn't see that. And she wanted other people to bail her out of those consequences rather than say, you know what? Like, I accept that. Like, I meant this. I felt this. I have, you know, I would do it again tomorrow. And I accept everything that comes along with that. You just don't see that very often.
Harvard Business Review provides information, tools, and practical advice on leadership, management, and strategy through the HBR.org website, their print publication, and their podcasts. HBR.org is your go-to for leadership and business management articles. A recent favorite is Stop Eliminating Perfectly Good Candidates by Asking Them the Wrong Questions. Then there are their world-famous case studies, which premium subscribers can access as well. HBR produces a number of leading podcasts, from HBR on Leadership to my favorite, the HBR IdeaCast podcast. A subscription to HBR also includes access to videos, The Big Idea, HBR Magazine, and a wide variety of newsletters. While much of the Harvard Business Review content is available for free after signing up at their site, subscriptions to unlimited content start at only $10 a month. Go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter promo code ELEVATE right now to take advantage of this great offer. Again, go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter promo code ELEVATE to learn more about this great opportunity to help manage your career and business.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I think it's one thing to read a history book and understand, say, the great sacrifices of the leaders of the civil rights movement and things like that. But it is, I think that some of the context does get stripped away. And some of this, I think, happens in part because, with good reason, there has been an attempt to create this moral halo around the people who made great sacrifices for the civil rights movement, for example. But what I think that strips away contextually is, to some degree, the truly enormous risk that people were taking on by doing those things. And not just people like Martin Luther King and like John Lewis and other scions of the movement, but also any person who went to a civil rights march, for example. Any individual person was putting their safety in jeopardy by doing that. And I think that the gravity of that was really part of the power of the activism, as it was in the case with Navalny. Of Navalny's example, I think, is more powerful to people. And I think his legacy will live on with people who support him because he paid that ultimate price. And I think, as you were saying, there's sort of that separation of the action and the consequence, and the fact that the consequence in some ways gives the action its power.
Yeah, look, I've always said, you know, one of my hallmark things that I lean back on as a parent is making sure that my kids understand action and consequences. And I don't say consequence always as a negative, but that like actions have reactions, equal and opposite reactions, and they go together. And I think you need to learn that stuff. And that's part of the problem with kind of helicopter parenting, is sort of sticking a, I think for a lot of kids, is someone, they've stuck a piece of wood or metal in front of that kind of organic process, which, oh, I do this and this happens, or I do this and this happens. And so somehow, for better or for worse, our actions are decoupled from the outcomes and the effect that it has. And that is, I think, probably one of the reasons why this is a surprise for a lot of people today. I think that may be an outcrop of over-parenting. But I've always said I really want my kids to make sure they understand those things, both positive and negative, and try not to jump in the middle of them, because that's how you figure out decision-making in life and risk and where you want to stick your neck out and where you don't and where it feels good and where it doesn't. And I think a lot of that is missing today. And as you alluded to before, a lot of that is because online advocacy is a little bit of an oxymoron, right? He came back to Russia. He was there in person. A lot of stuff's going on in person. A lot of this kind of post and scream and run and delete and duck, like it and hiding and doing it under someone else's name, and you know, do something virtuous under your main account and then attack someone under your pseudonym account. Like it is just stripping away that sort of real life cause and effect.
I think this is also a really good example of how a positive incentive can become a perverse incentive as well. Virtue signaling surely existed before the 2016 presidential election, but I do think that regardless of how you felt about that when it happened, there was a real sense of anxiety, a real sense of fear among a lot of people. And I think a lot of people in that, especially in the early days of that administration, felt extremely helpless and as if there was nothing they could do to change anything. And I think that for a lot of people, a galvanization took place of people saying, get on Twitter and say, this is not normal. And, you know, you can't change who the president is, but you can go online and you can post about it, and providing an outlet for people. And I don't want to just make a broad generalization that that was absolutely bad and that it never did any good. But it's undeniable that it led to a lot of people who attempted to gain credibility, in some cases to build careers, by being these extremely strident virtue signaling critics of the Trump administration. I mean, back when he was on Twitter, you could see these people, the same 10 people replying to all of his tweets saying, you know, it is you, sir, who is wrong. And that wasn't serious engagement with any of the issues at hand. It was just an attempt to get some fame by piling on.
Yeah, people want to be on the inside or they want to be on the outside, right? So that's probably the opposite of virtue signaling is probably, I mean, I guess it is virtue because you're trying to espouse the opposite virtue, but some sort of disagreement signaling where you're just going to kind of jump in and take the opposite because you want to just be distance, you know, from that person, when again, there is more nuance. Another really good example of this that I wrote about in a Friday Forward, maybe last year, or could have been 2022, was Dan Price, who was the CEO of Gravity Payments. And Dan was on the cover of every magazine talking about culture and how he cut his salary down to the average thing and raised the salary of his employees. And there wasn't a magazine cover he wasn't on about him talking about how great he was and you know, how much he believed in culture. And honestly, rang every alarm bell for me in the world. A lot of times I have been fooled or not fooled, but I was very skeptical because he was just always kind of talking about himself and the great deeds that he was doing. And then it comes out, you know, all of these horrible things and toxic culture and sexual harassment, all this stuff. And so, but here's the thing, that he probably was so narcissistic that he did all of that stuff to cover what was going on. And so many people jumped on his bandwagon without looking or thinking, you know, and they were they were just drinking his Kool-Aid, and he probably did all of that stuff. If you look, go look at the history of sort of his actions, he might have actually done all of that stuff as a cover for some of the bad stuff that he had done and was doing, and that he was afraid to come out. And there were just the press and so many people were willing to jump on that and virtue signaling his praises without really looking under the hood at all.
There's a specific pop culture figure who I think potentially uses activism statements online to insulate themselves for criticism, but to avoid tarnishing your brand, I won't name them. But it's a really good example.
Yeah, so this is where everyone else becomes complicit in it, right?
Yeah, and I think in a lot of cases, it is just people can be very credulous when they want to believe something. And yeah, they want, you know, people wanted to believe in what Dan Price was selling because they liked the idea of elevating this extremely ethical, quote unquote, CEO, who, again, it was cover and it was effective.
Yeah.
So I think that one thing that is notable is that this talks about the importance of standing your ground and knowing that just because someone criticizes your viewpoint doesn't mean you should back away from it. True conviction in the face of criticism. You have also written about the importance of being open to changing your mind. And I don't think at all that those are two mutually exclusive things, but I am curious for how you make the distinction yourself between something that is just a non-negotiable, stand behind it no matter what the criticism, and what is something where you are more open-minded to criticism and willing to change your mind.
Yeah, so the key thing here is, why did you change your mind? Did you change your mind because people provided perspective that impacted your belief set and altered what you thought, and you actually don't believe what you believed anymore or changed it? Or did you change your viewpoint, not your mind, but you hadn't changed your mind because it was safer to do so, right? And I think the former is always good. And I think it's good to say, look, yeah, you know what? Upon reflecting on the new evidence, you know, admitted here, like my opinion is altered. But if your opinion is based deeply on a value, it probably doesn't alter that much. But you might say, hey, look, I was wrong here, or there's more nuance or otherwise. But my guess is, in a lot of cases, people actually don't change what they believe. They just change what they say because it got a little hot in the kitchen. And that seems like the easy way out.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I think that to simplify the distinction, it's about reactive versus conscious. And if you say, oh, I think that all airplanes should be free, or I think all plane rides should be free, and everyone screams at you and says, that's stupid, I can't believe you think that. If you are thinking, oh, people are mad at me, clearly I'm wrong, or I'm not going to say this anymore, that's probably not a good change. Yeah. But if you are hearing counter proposals to what you're saying and you're thinking, huh, this makes a lot of sense, that's worth revisiting your opinion on it.
100%. Look, we should all be willing to revisit, but these things that we're talking about in values tend to be foundational things, right? Like treating people well. You know, it's very likely, if that's a core value of yours, that you're going to be willing to find a case where we should treat someone horribly. I mean, yeah, there could be some outlier, but so again, it's just how foundational is it for you? How much of a value is it? Again, how much do you care? And how much, you know, are you willing to stick with that? If that was a scale of 1 to 10, you know, we also wrote a post recently about, like, it was a leadership moment about in decision making, when people are arguing, like, ask someone on a 1 to 5 how much they really care. Because some people just like arguing red or black t-shirts, you know, to the end. And that helps you go with a person who really cares more if the opinions are sort of equal. I think there's a similar version of that here, right? A lot of these things, people don't really have a strong opinion. It just feels easy to kind of throw it in. And some of them are things that really strike pretty deeply for people, particularly in this case that we started with, which was, you know, about the whole institution and the political system in the Russian government that he was strongly opposed and felt like was unfair to the citizens of Russia.
So that's a pretty good segue, actually, to the quote of the week, which is from Frederick Douglass. "I prefer to be true to myself, even at the hazard of incurring the ridicule of others, rather than to be false and to incur my own abhorrence." What resonates with you about this?
Yeah, such a well-written quote. Look, this goes before to what you were asking me. It goes to the sort of authenticity, right? What are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to sacrifice the public perception or your internal sort of value set or otherwise? And I think, you know, the incur my own abhorrence is sort of an acknowledgement to that. It's very easy to, you know, ignore the ridicule by giving up the things that you really care about the most. And then that causes a different sort of pain, right? The pain of external validation versus the pain of feeling that you kind of maybe are a fraud to yourself. And I think in the moment, the first one feels, it's sort of a short-term, long-term. My guess is like external validation is sort of the easy thing to try to cure or plug the dam on. But I'm guessing like internal misalignment or crossing your own values or doing that for the appeasement of others is probably a worse feeling in the long run for most people.
You can't lie to yourself forever.
You can in the short term.
Yeah. Dan Price might be able to. I don't know. All right. Want to take us out?
So thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Weekend Conversations. If you want to check out the post we just discussed, go to robertglaser.substack.com and look for the post titled Signaling Virtue. Also, keep your eye open for your future editions of Weekend Conversations, which will be in your podcast feed on Saturday mornings. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the show, please follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast app, as that's how you learn about new episodes and keep up to date on all the latest. So until next time, keep elevating. Hello, Elevate Podcast listeners. I wanted to let you know about my friend Darius and his amazing show, The Greatness Machine. The Greatness Machine is one of the top-ranked educational and business podcasts in the country, recently ranking top 5 in the entrepreneurial category on iTunes. Here's why I love Darius and The Greatness Machine. It really comes down to a few things. The Greatness Machine has amazing guests from the likes of sports icon Gabby Reese, worldwide news sensation Amanda Knox, FBI hostage negotiator Chris Voss, and Tiny Habits expert and author BJ Fogg, to NHL Hall of Famer Chris Pronger, and hundreds more. Darius keeps it real. I always learn something new, and I have a few laughs. And he always also asks great questions and is a really entertaining and engaging host. The Greatness Machine is where you get to be a fly on the wall and listen to Darius and his amazing group of guests talk about how they got to where they are today and hear stories of people who have lived their passions to create greatness in the world and doing so despite the odds. So if you want to be entertained while learning from some of the greatest and most accomplished people in the world, this is definitely a show for you to check out. Subscribe to The Greatness Machine today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast. or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.